Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me this week. Before we get started, I want to say just a couple things. Thank you to the people who are making this show possible. That is Blue Lives Matter, first of all. Blue Lives Matter is the largest grassroots police support organization in the country with about 1.4 million followers on Facebook. And our website, bluelivesmatter.blue, is the news and information website that you want to take a look at whenever you are looking for news and information about anything law enforcement. BlueLivesMatter.blue. Also, I want to thank Warrior 12. Warrior12.com. They are the coolest t-shirts for law enforcement that exist in the world today. That sounds a little enthusiastic. It's because I love their t-shirts, and you will too. Warrior12.com. And finally, my newest sponsor, somebody that I've very proud to make the acquaintance of the other day, Doug Carter and his folks at JSD Protective Services. JSD Protective Services is the 21st century security company, and I'm going to talk about them a little further down the road, but they are at jsdprotectiveservices.com. Now, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
In this week's View from the Blue, we've got several major things that I want to talk about. But before I get into some of the, shall we say, the stuff that's going to bring your blood pressure up, I want to tell you about a pretty amazing story that came out of the city of Sacramento. Actually, it was the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department in California. I saw a video that really was, it was very touching. It's a little sad, but it shows the heart of law enforcement. And I want to read you this is the text from the post that they put on Facebook that went along with the video. They entitled it "The Strength of a Family." Yesterday afternoon, many members of our department had the pleasure of meeting a very special little boy and his family. 5-year-old Jaden has always dreamt of becoming a police officer. Unfortunately, Jaden's mom has been diagnosed with a terminal illness. Her last wish is to see Jaden become a police officer. Members from our Community Relations Unit, Youth Services Unit, K-9 Detail, Air Operations, and North Patrol came together to help make that wish come true. Jaden was presented with his very own Sacramento Sheriff uniform, gear belt, and vehicle as he became an honorary deputy sheriff. He also learned how handcuffs work, practiced some self-defense moves, and received a special flyover from STAR with a very special message. Jaden met K-9, ASCO, and watched a K-9 demonstration, and later received some special gifts that included K-9 t-shirts, stickers, a challenge coin, and some special toys. Jaden is a strong boy with an infectious smile, and we couldn't be more proud to have him as part of our family. Welcome to our family, Deputy Jaden. One of the things that policing doesn't get enough credit for is the heart that they have. And watching this video really demonstrates that in a big way. If you want to take a look at it, go to my Facebook page, Randy Sutton Public Figure. Scroll down and you'll see it. It's pretty moving. Now, let's talk about some, shall we say, more upsetting kind of news. And that is, one of my favorite subjects is Marilyn Mosby. Now, you'll remember Marilyn Mosby. She is the prosecutor for Baltimore that decided to take the 6 officers involved in the Freddie Gray case to trial against the better judgment of the police department. She got her butt handed to her in a lot of different ways. Now, as a result of her vehemence, making political statements and going after these officers, all of whom were either found not guilty or the charges dismissed, the officers are turning the tide on Marilyn Mosby. They are suing her, and this has been progressing through the courts. Now, here's what's interesting. There's never been a successful prosecution or civil lawsuit against a prosecutor of this type. Generally speaking, they are given immunity. Well, because of the manner in which Marilyn Mosby conducted herself, she felt like she was going to get immunity. But guess what, folks? The judges who have been presiding over the civil case against her have been consistently and constantly ruling in the officer's favor, which means that discovery is now taking place. Discovery means that everything involved with the charges against her, which is malicious prosecution, can now be obtained by the defense attorneys of the officers who have filed the cases against Marilyn Mosby. This is huge. This is huge for police officers because this reveals that there can be a successful lawsuit filed against a prosecutor who maliciously maligns police officers and charges them when they should not be charged. This is a case that needs to be watched. Now, Marilyn Mosby, you would think, would be kind of licking her wounds and maybe maintaining a low profile. But just days after the announcement that the case against her was going to be allowed to move forward, she made another move against the Baltimore Police Department. And what she has now announced is that she is going to make public all use of force investigations against police officers. Now, what does that mean in reality? That means that police officers' names are going to be dragged through the mud publicly, giving access to personnel files that should be simply a matter of a personnel investigation. This is warfare, is in essence what this is. Marilyn Mosby has proclaimed herself a person of the people, and without a doubt, she is on a political rampage against law enforcement officers. This has been evident from the beginnings of this entire situation in Baltimore, beginning with the riots, and then with the Freddie Gray case, and now she is continuing. I'm hoping to talk to someone from the Baltimore Fraternal Order of Police about this, and I will keep you advised. JSD Protective Services, they are the 21st century security company in America. Now, I got to tell you, I've worked with a lot of different security companies in my role as a police officer, and most of them, they're not very impressive. This company, JSD Protective Services, is the exception. The owner of this company takes an amazing amount of pride with what he has created. They do it all. They do private detective work. They do armed security. They do courier work. In fact, I believe that all of their security people are armed. And here's the difference. This company provides incredible training to their security officers. And they are security officers in every sense of the word. Their training rivals most police training in the United States today, including firearms training, handcuffing, legal issues. It's really impressive, and this company is really impressive. So if you are looking for security for anything from a jewelry store to a apartment complex or any other of your security needs, I would really urge you to contact JSD Protective Services. Their phone number is 1-844-663-3611, and their website is jsdprotectiveservices.com. Check them out. You won't be sorry. The next situation I want to talk to you about is really going to get your blood pressure up, because what is taking place in Florida is beyond comprehension. First of all, you'll remember that just a few months ago, a horrible murder of a police officer took place. Lieutenant Deborah Clayton was murdered in a Walmart parking lot by a murder suspect, Marikeith Lloyd. Now, Marikeith Lloyd had shot his pregnant girlfriend. He was wanted. The lieutenant was given information. She happened to be at the Walmart for some other reason. Was given information there was a possible fugitive in the store. Well, as she walked in to investigate, this subject, Marikeith Lloyd, had just stolen a security vest that made him look like a security guard. As he walked past her, he turned around and shot her. And when she fell to the ground, he executed her. It's a horrible, horrible murder. And then, to make matters even worse, while officers were responding to her murder, another Orlando police officer lost his life in a traffic collision, rushing to her aid. Two officers killed as a result of Marikeith Lloyd. Marikeith Lloyd was able to escape for a short period of time. He was eventually arrested, and several people were arrested for helping him, including relatives and some friends. So now, let's move to the future. He's in custody, and the new district attorney, or I think her title is state's attorney, gets the case. Her name is Aramia Ayala. Now, this is a death penalty case, if there ever was a death penalty case. And Florida isn't shy about using the death penalty. What does this Aramia Ayala do first off? She makes a public announcement that she doesn't believe in the death penalty. And so she's not going to use it for Marikeith Lloyd. And then she makes some other political statements about this. Well, let me tell you, the entire law enforcement community was outraged, and it made headlines. And in what I can only say is a departure from the normal political correctness, Governor Rick Scott of Florida stepped in, removed her as the prosecutor, which is almost unheard of, and then assigned a different prosecutor. Well, as this information came out about her not moving this case into where it should be adjudicated and as a death penalty case, it was discovered that A, she is married to a felon who was a drug dealer and some other charges, and her Facebook posts were very interesting and very revealing. It revealed that she had the leanings towards supporting Black Lives Matter, had accused cops of racist murders, and a bunch of other insulting, demeaning comments against law enforcement. And then, as if it couldn't get any worse, it was revealed that who was one of her major contributors to her successful political campaign to get elected? None other than George Soros, the man who's been pulling the strings for Black Lives Matter and many other radical organizations. And she is now been removed as the prosecutor for this case. But you think that would be enough? She is not taking the hint, though. She is pretending that she is still the prosecutor on the case and is still filing motions, even though she's not the prosecutor, because she's claiming that the governor doesn't have the authority to do what he did. So this is going to be one to watch. How she got elected to begin with is simply because of money funneled to her by this radical George Soros. And I can't imagine what law enforcement in the Orlando area is going to have to put up with the next 4 years while she is the state's prosecutor. People like this should not be in positions of authority, and whether they are elected or not. And I'm hopeful that Governor Rick Scott is going to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and continue to try and make sure that the people and law enforcement especially is protected against this Aramia Ayala, the state's attorney in Orlando. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. Unfortunately, because it's radio, you can't see the very cool t-shirt I'm wearing. It says Blue Lives Matter, and it's a really high quality shirt. I must say it looks smashing on me, just smashing. And all of the Blue Lives line of t-shirts is available at warrior12.com. Check out warrior12.com. You can also see the t-shirts at bluelivesmatter.blue. But in order to see the whole line and get some very cool t-shirts, go to warrior12.com, and then maybe you can look, maybe as cool as me.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Download our new apps and be part of the most informed audience in broadcast. Like a lot of people I know, I was struggling with that work-life balance. You know, working really long hours, trouble sleeping at night, even my energy was low. Well, I knew something had to change when I found myself in the hospital. Well, then someone sent me a product called Healthy Cell Pro and told me to take it for 30 days. I figured, what do I got to lose? 3 weeks into a one-month supply and, well, the results told me everything. More restful sleep, a sharper focus. I even had more energy, even from Malcolm Out Loud, that is. Nobel Prize nominee inventor, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. He explains it this way. It works by infusing your cells with over 60 plant-derived phytonutrients that target the building block of your body, which is the cell. Well, I liked it so much, I asked the company for a special deal for you. Instead of $110 plus shipping, you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. Just go to healthycell.com, use the limited time offer code OUTLOUD.
With me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a police officer turned filmmaker. But he's still a police officer. Patrick Shaver is my guest today, and he is the producer, director, and chief cook and bottle washer behind a pretty incredible film that is going to benefit many police officers around the country. Pat Shaver, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Hey, thank you, LT. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Well, first of all, you are an active duty police officer, and you had an idea to do a documentary film. Let's talk about, first of all, what's the name of the film?
Sure. Our film is called Officer Involved, and it's a documentary that looks at what police officers experience after a shooting.
Now, what caused you to want to do this film?
There were so many reasons, and I'm the type of person that I never do anything for just one reason. But before I was a police officer, I had my master's degree in conflict management. I always knew that I wanted to be a hostage negotiator. That was it. That was my career goal. So the most education that I could get, I wanted to get it. So I got this master's degree in conflict management, became a police officer, and within a couple of years on the job, I watched one of my friends go through a shooting. And I found it really interesting that parts of his personality changed, the way people treated him changed. I think the way that I saw him and the way I had conversations with him changed. Very shortly after that, another friend of mine asked me, well, why can't a cop just shoot the tires off the car? Why can't you shoot someone in the arm or the leg? And I told him, let me find something that's in documentary form that shows you that we don't want to shoot people. One thing led to another. We couldn't find the movie. I got together with my wife and I said, let's make it. Let's do it. And the rest is all just kind of in history.
Well, there's a lot to creating a film. And had you done any film work before?
No, sir. Not any bit. we learned, and when I say we, myself and my wife, we learned how to make film in the streets. We learned from the first day that we set up an interview, we learned camera placement, we learned sound, we learned editing. We had a little bit of coaching along the way from a couple friends here and there, but the rest of it has just been done completely independently, and it's been trial and error, mostly error.
Well, I mean, I saw some of your end result, and it's very, very good quality and very impactful. You know, you have struck out to try and explain something that is almost unexplainable, the aftermath of an officer-involved shooting. Unfortunately, I speak from personal experience, having been involved in several officer-involved shootings, and the way it changes you, not necessarily for the negative, but it has a profound effect on your life. And that is the whole idea behind your film, is to demonstrate that so that people feel that viscerally, correct?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We're not teaching police officers what happens after a shooting. We're doing a great job of teaching police officers the legal, the procedural stuff, what they need to know to pull that gun out, and then how to pull that gun out. We're teaching them that. But we're not teaching them what happens after the shooting. And so what we really delved into in our film is, what was it like for you after the shooting? And we covered everything from what did you do directly afterwards to how did you explain it to your family? We even got into religious issues and what it was like to return to work. And all these concepts that police officers, unless they've been through it themselves, they probably haven't given much thought to. And that's not to say that the film was meant for police officers. We know just from our officers that have watched it that they really enjoy the film. They're getting a lot out of it. But we also wanted the civilian world to see it, that it's not a 3-day to a week paid vacation. It is an excruciating period that starts the moment the crime scene tape goes up.
Exactly. And, you know, what was the big takeaway? I mean, for you, speaking to all of these officers who have done something so foreign as to take a human life, that had to be an incredible experience for you and your wife as well.
When I was actively working on the street, so right now I'm actually on an approved leave of absence. I'll start back at work on April 9th. I took about 11 months off of work to show the movie around the country. But when I was in the streets, we were filming this movie. So I'd be working during the week, and then on the weekends or whenever my vacation days would line up, we would go and film. And it was such a real eye-opening experience. As police officers, we say that we see the worst of the worst. That's what we say as cops. As the police officer filming this movie, we were seeing the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. Because it is that one thing that no one ever wants to happen, but it did happen, and now we're getting in depth into what happens next. So it was a challenging experience. It really pushed our own emotions a lot, but it pulled us out of our comfort zone and introduced us to this whole world that we're finally going to be able to open up and show other people.
Well, your dedication is pretty amazing. The fact that you took an unpaid leave of absence to basically show your film to cops all over the country. How many police officers do you think in the last 11 months or so have actually seen your film?
I would estimate it in the thousands. We never kept track by any means whatsoever. We've had audiences as small as 7 people. We've had audiences as large as 300 plus. So I can't really say. I think the count this morning was we've shown it at least 82 times, and it's all been done independently. Now, we did ask our departments for a fee, and that usually covered our travel expenses and helped us to live while we took it around the country, but zero sponsors, zero organizational backing, other than my department telling me they'll hold my job for me. We've been able to do the whole thing independently. It's just been a passion. And I know there's a lot of cops out there that are probably like me. A lot of people told me early on that this project can't be done. You won't be able to do it. Nobody's going to tell the stories. when I say cops are probably like me, and you might be like me too, LT, the more someone tells me I can't do something, the more I'm going to do it. The more I'm going to show them I can. If elbow grease is the one determining factor, it's going to get done. And that was part of the driving force behind the film, with a few people right up front that said, I don't think you'll be able to do it, or else it would have already been done. Someone else would have already done it.
Is there a particular memory that you have? You know, I'm sure that amongst your audience, there were police officers who have been involved in shootings, and this film might have brought some really serious emotions to the surface. Are there any particular poignant memories that you have of interactions as a result?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in fact, one of the interesting things, and this was pointed out to me this summer at a conference where we showed the film, we showed it at the TMDA conference in Texas. One of my friends who's a police officer said, I just can't believe all the people that just come up to you and tell you their story. And they did it. They did it over the course of the weekend while we were there for the conference. Officers would just see me in the hall and stop me and tell me about their shooting. So that became something that we get everywhere we go. And I give them all my attention because they wouldn't be talking about their story if it didn't mean something to them. But one in particular that I will always remember, it was from the first time we ever showed the film. It was to a private audience in New Orleans. It was at a high school, and it was local cops and friends of one of the officers that's in our film. We had, I want to say, 50 to 70 people were there. And at the end, a police sergeant walked up to me, and his eyes were red. So he was either in tears or he'd been crying. And he said, for 20 years, I haven't been able to tell my wife what it's like. Tonight, she knows. And then it was amazing. And a woman came from behind him and just hugged me and said, thank you. That was the very first moment of moments that we've had across the country because of our work on this project.
That's an amazing story. And it does not surprise me. Sometimes during my appearances around the country when I do a seminar, I talk about one of my shootings, and it elicits such a response afterwards when officers come up to me and want to share something. It is truly an amazing feeling that you're being able to touch those lives like that. What do you think? What is the goal for this film for you?
My goal for the film is to get it out there, to have it be part of the conversation. And I know this from the work that you do. We can't have too many conversations. We need to be talking about this stuff. For far too long, we've kept too many parts of the police world private. And you can argue both sides of why that is. But if you look at what's been happening in our country, one of the things that's missing is these people and projects and things to connect the actual people who do the job with the image of the big bad police officer. So our goal with this film is to put the human image out there so that people can see it, so that if, you know, a year down the road, someone gets involved in a shooting and it goes to the news and the press is overwhelmingly negative, somebody will say, well, hold on, let's talk about the human perspective, because I saw this film and this film showed something. Can we talk about that? So that's our goal. Our goal is not to change the conversation. It's not to hijack the conversation. It's to add information to it. And I'm just so proud of the work that we've been able to do. I think that we're going to be able to do that. So that's the goal.
Well, I mean, the fact that you have had it viewed that many times in this short period of time, that's quite an accomplishment. Literally every time that you show that film, you're touching lives, which is something that, you know, I agree with you is just so vitally important. And, you know, I think some of the major issues facing law enforcement today are because of the dehumanizing of the men and women who serve. And I don't think it was done by accident. I think that there was a serious attempt by certain political groups like Black Lives Matter and Soros-funded organizations to actively try and dehumanize law enforcement for political purposes. And so the only way to combat that is to reveal the humanity of the men and women who serve. And that's, I believe, that's what you're telling me is your goal, and it sounds like you're accomplishing it.
And that is absolutely it. We've always, since we started this project, we've avoided any type of a political discussion. And what I say is this, there's people out there that are much smarter than me that can articulate it more than me. I've been somehow given a gift in the filmmaking process, or maybe it was in my career, that I have this opportunity to bring these personalities to the screen. And people reached out to us from across the country and said, can I get involved in this project somehow? We've done the absolute best that we can to say, look, here they are. Here's their voices. These are their names. Here's what their faces look like. Here's the tears in their eyes. Can we deny that this human part of it exists? And I don't think we can. I don't think we can continue anymore as a society dehumanizing the police officers that serve our communities. One of the things that I often talk about is that the officer signs up to do the job to serve the community. And you know this as well. Most police officers will never pull a trigger in their entire career. But when someone does, suddenly they've either severely injured someone or taken a human life in that same exact community that they swore an oath to serve. That creates a conflict that nobody's ready for.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. How many officers did you speak to for this production?
So we spoke with, I want to say we interviewed over 125 police officers.
Wow.
We filmed about 70 interviews between police officers and experts. And then we also filmed a bunch of citizens as well and got some interesting opinions. But we're probably not done. We're probably going to turn this into a long-term project and create either some sort of an exhibit or something that you can just hear these voices of these officers. LP, we've got, 300 hours of footage. The movie itself is 96 minutes long.
That's a full-length feature film.
Yep. And 96 minutes long. It is a full-length documentary. And again, like I said before, it was more error than when in the trial and error phase. But we put it together, and I'm just really happy with what came out of it, especially doing it privately. We raised about $8,000 to $10,000 from private contributors across the country, many of which we never met, but they contributed to us. The rest was all elbow grease.
Well, once again, the name of this film is Officer Involved, for the listeners who have just tuned in. And this was a work of passion. This was a work of necessity in the context that you felt driven to do it because of your profession.
Sir.
How long have you been a police officer?
So I've been with my department since, let me see here. I've been a police officer now almost 5 years. So
okay.
four and a half years. I'm trying to do the math in my head.
Well, you got a lot of years ahead of you. And is this effort that you've done, you've just gotten a taste for it now. I don't think you're just going to be satisfied pushing a black and white around for the next 20 years without continuing this enterprise in some shape or form. Am I correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're going to continue doing more film. We've got ideas for scripted projects that will be actual non-documentary works. Some fictional works, and then more work on documentary. We've just actually started asking some people to get involved in our next documentary, and that's even independent from other work that will come out of this. We really do think that we're probably either going to create an online series or a series of shorts or that exhibit that I spoke of to keep showing this stuff, because I think the more it's out there, the less people can deny the human aspect to it.
How about negative aspects? Have you had any people protest? Have you had any negative feedback from people because of political considerations or anything like that?
You know, most of the negative that we've received has been through social media, and it's been folks that haven't seen the film. And a lot of that was during production. People would send messages to us or make public comments. One comment that, you know, I'll always remember, it sticks out in my mind. Somebody sent us a tweet that said, "Ew, a movie that humanizes killer cops." And the more I read that tweet, the more I didn't really believe that that was too far from the truth. Look at what we've done in this film. We're humanizing people that you call killers. We're showing you the human aspect of the cops. So that one, to me, won't really go down in history as the most negative tweet. But we really haven't had any negative feedback. We've had some people that maybe didn't like the events, where we've had one or two people from the film speak, but not a single negative piece of feedback has come out of the film, including people that might be opposed politically, even though our film is not political whatsoever.
Right.
So, absolutely. And we had some people come out to an event in Houston where we were, and during the film, there was some kind of a verbal interaction, and they said, "We need to be having conversations. We need to be having conversations." And for whatever reason, two parties there sort of got into a heated exchange. We invited them to come back in and sit down and watch the rest of the film. I think they will eventually do it, but it'll be on their own time. But really, nothing but support so far.
How has the leadership of police agencies that have participated in viewing the film, how has their reaction been?
Very well, very well. With a lot of our police departments that reach out to us, they either choose a supervisor or a command staff member to play point, who contacts us and helps us to make our arrangements. But 100% of the command staff that have seen the film have said positive things about it. We've even had departments like Wausau Police Department in Wisconsin and Cedar Hill Police Department in Texas actually go online and talk about our film afterwards. And that's just amazing, because these are their images and their public affairs and their Facebook pages, and they're saying positive things about our film for the whole world to see. So we really have had a positive response from command staff across the country.
That's awesome. When you are showing the film, and as you said, that there are sometimes very small audiences, sometimes larger ones, a 300 person audience is a pretty major audience there. Have you had any people that became very emotional as a result of seeing something that has touched a chord in them?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, I can say wholeheartedly that we're at a point right now where we know the certain sections of the film that people are going to get really emotional to, because we watch them shift in their chairs. We watch them reach for tissues. We watch wives put their arms around their husbands at certain parts. So, they are having an emotional reaction to it. We were in Ventura County, California. We did two showings at Thousand Oaks at a movie theater there. And as they were checking people in at the door, they had one table that was just full of boxes of tissues.
Someone got the word, huh?
And it was gone. Yeah. And that said, it's not a full tearjerker. We tried really hard to balance the serious content, the stuff that will hit people in the emotions, but also a sense of humor. There is some humor in the film to help balance it out, and it's a humor that will, I believe, strike everybody, especially police officers, the right way. It helps balance the tone of the film.
You know, that's really important. And, of course, there's a lot of gallows humor with law enforcement officers. I'm sure that during the filming of this, you got your share of gallows humor as well. And that must have been kind of interesting to insert some of that into the film.
It was really moving for us, for these officers to open up and talk to us so much. One thing that I'll say is these officers, I believe, opened up to us because I'm a cop. I am a police officer. I work for a large department, and so we could speak on the same level. So once we started talking and were very conversational, they would turn on a gallows humor once in a while, and they would say things to me that it's not that they forgot the cameras were running. It's that they treated me like I was another one of their coworkers or just one of their friends. We did make a decision that in the film, we're going to try to cut out a lot of the technical language.
Because, sure.
As you know, police officer, we can talk in 10 codes or we can call things by signals. But you know, gallows humor was one of those things. There are a couple comments inside the film, and I think probably most of your listeners know this, but police officers, we use a sense of humor to cope with things that are tragic, to cope with things that push our emotions and push us someplace we've never been before. The humor, that's one of our coping mechanisms. And the same way with doctors and nurses, by which I'm actually married to a nurse who made a great partner on the film.
Oh, I can imagine. You're right. There's the thing you have to be careful of, I'm sure, is because of some of that humor, so others that are not involved in the police world could view that as being cruel or being jaded or something along those lines. So it has to be treated rather carefully.
Absolutely. And you really need to strike a balance. One of the challenges with documentary is that you've got an hour and a half to tell a story. That's how much time you have. And there were certain quotes from the film that if we were to put that quote on the film, now we're going to need to spend 5 to 10 minutes explaining that.
Right.
Where did that come from? So we didn't get into some of that stuff. But one of the challenges with documentary is that you're constrained by your time to tell the story. And we could just go on and on about some of these officers in their specific situations. We've got guys and girls that we've interviewed, it's years later, and they still talk about it every single day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I want to talk about post-traumatic stress injury for a moment. Very, very often, a shooting situation, officer-involved shootings, are associated with post-traumatic stress injury. I refer to it as injury rather than disorder, because I believe that that's a more reflective term for it, and it's a little more demonstrative of what post-traumatic stress can do to you. It doesn't have to be a disorder. It's an injury that can be treated. When you were doing these interviews and bringing up these deep emotional turbulence that revolves around shootings, did you see evidence that people had post-traumatic stress injury and were dealing with it, and it came up during the interviews?
So, absolutely. In fact, one of our questions that we asked our officers and our experts was something around PTSD. Have you ever thought that you might have PTSD, or have you ever been diagnosed with it? And a few of our officers, and they're actually in the film, talking about post-traumatic stress. A few of our officers have extreme reactions, and these are people that are still dealing with it every day. Now, we do touch on this in our film, in that most people will go through the shooting, find a way to incorporate it into their lives, and move forward. And it's not that it's not important. It is important, but they find a way to incorporate it into their lives. There is a small portion, and different people will say that's a different number, but there's a portion of people that go through shooting that do develop post-traumatic stress or have the signs of it. We showed a couple of them in our film, and they very freely talked about it.
That's good. I'm happy to hear that. You know, I believe that that by bringing this subject out into the open, police officers all over this nation can be touched in very, very positive ways. And I really do applaud you for taking on such a weighty project and continuing on to do it. How can people get the opportunity to see the film?
Sure. So there's an interesting story behind that, and we thought that we were going to be able to take this film and get out there and go to the film festivals, and we applied to a ton of film festivals, and in the end, we were able to be shown at the Knoxville Film Festival in Tennessee. That was such a huge honor. But in the meantime, we showed it around the country in screenings with police departments. We are now at a point where we have submitted it to the online platforms, and we are now doing DVD pre-order at our website. So our website is officerinvolvedproject.com, and they can go there and just click on the order button, and anyone can pre-order it at this point. The goal is to have these DVDs delivered by mid-April, and our fingers are crossed that we'll hit the online platforms by May 1st. Fingers are crossed for that.
Explain the online platforms to me.
Sure. The typical online platforms are the ones that we've applied to at this point, Google Play and iTunes, as well as a couple other ones that we're going to be submitting to. We're seeing where we go with our first submissions, and I do believe that we'll be on iTunes by May 1st.
Okay, so people will be able to subscribe to iTunes, that is, and then view the film there and other platforms.
Yes. Yep. So at iTunes, it'll be sold there for whatever price it is that it is sold for by iTunes. There'll be an SD copy, a standard, and then a high definition copy, and that'll just be the digital version. So people will be able to buy it, download it there at iTunes, and then they'll also be able to buy the DVD through our website. And so far, it's been pretty well. We've had orders come in from across the country. We've had interest from Europe, and we had somebody buy a DVD this morning from Canada. So the message is getting out there, and people are interested.
Are you going to continue to tour with it? You have the opportunity, once you show a film like this, to begin a real serious discussion. Has that been part of what you've been doing?
Yeah, so that has been part of what we've been doing. We open it up with a conversation on who we are, how we got started. We show the film, and then we end it with a discussion on the challenges, the lessons that we learned, and where we see our country going. Now, when I took 11 months off from work, my wife, myself, and our toddler son, he was 6 months old at the time, we moved into a travel trailer, and we pulled it across the country. We've now traveled over 50,000 miles since May of last year.
That's amazing. Amazing.
I'll tell you. Oh, my God, I'll tell you. Just the people in this country, whether it's police officers or everyday citizens, the interactions that we've had across the country inspire so much hope, because there are places in America where you can't drive down the road without people waving to you. They don't know who you are. They're just waving to you because you're driving down the road. There's so much that is still alive in America as far as our ideals. And police officers, too, I want them to know that they are still appreciated and respected everywhere. And these sort of really anti-police narratives, it's a small percentage of the rest of the population. But these are just the things that we learn while we're traveling and meeting people. We would absolutely love to continue screening the film. I've got a clock back in on April 9th to save my job. And we're doing some screenings in April, and we'd love to continue to come do them. There's a small fee involved, which is going to help us with our travel and getting there. But we've actually got screenings now. I will be a speaker at SUNY Canton's Law Enforcement Day. That's in New York. 2 days later, I'll be a speaker at the National Association of Field Training Officers in Washington. And it's amazing. It's great that they're bringing it in and seeing the value in it. One thing that I'm really excited for, LT, is the exhibit in Charlotte at the Levine Museum of the New South. It's called No Justice, No Peace. And our film has been chosen to be shown as part of that exhibit. And it's going to be
That's a great honor.
I'll tell you what. It's just amazing that here I am. I'm just a cop from the streets. just another police officer that's just out there that wanted to do the right thing, and here we are now.
Well, so, you know what? We're running out of time, Patrick. Once again, I want to remind my listeners of your website. It's SirInvolvedProject.com. Go on there, check out the film, order it, and if you need to contact Patrick for some further information, do it there. Is there any other contact information that you want to tell my listeners?
They can either contact us through the website, or they can go on Facebook and visit Officer Involved Project on Facebook. Our team is very small. It's myself and my wife. If they reach out to us, one of us will get back to them.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Patrick, I appreciate what you're doing, and we'll check in with you again. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much, LT, and thank you for the work that you do in law enforcement.
I appreciate that. Blue Lives Matter is the largest grassroots police support organization in the country. If you're not a member, you need to be. Go to bluelivesmatter.blue, check the membership. And also, we have this unbelievable rewards program for shopping. It's really, truly amazing. You get a discount, and anything that you buy, you get a discount from. All you do is go download the application. If you want something from, say, JCPenney, you go to the JCPenney page, and you'll see what kind of discount you get. You actually get cash back. Check that out, too, at bluelivesmatter.blue. And, of course, that is the place to see all of your news and information about law enforcement. bluelivesmatter.blue.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we honor those officers who have given their lives in the line of duty during that week. Unfortunately, I have two names to read for this week's Badge of Honor. Police Officer Michael Hance of the New York City Police Department. This was another officer's death that resulted from cancer that he developed following the assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Officer Hance served with the New York City Police Department for 17 years and was assigned to the 111th Precinct. He is survived by his two daughters. His end of watch Sunday, March 12, 2017. The second officer who gave his life in the line of duty this week was Sergeant Sean T. Anderson of the East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office in Louisiana. Sergeant Sean Anderson was shot and killed at approximately 11 p.m. while investigating a rape. He and another officer had gone to a salon on O'Neill Lane to interview the suspect. A struggle ensued during the interview in which Sergeant Anderson was fatally shot. The subject was wounded during the incident and taken into custody. He died from his wounds several days later. Sergeant Anderson was a U.S. Army veteran, had served with the East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office for 18 years. His end of watch, Saturday, March 18th, 2017. May they rest in peace. JSD Protective Services, they are the 21st century security company in America. Now, I got to tell you, I've worked with a lot of different security companies in my role as a police officer. And most of them, they're not very impressive. This company, JSD Protective Services, is the exception. The owner of this company takes an amazing amount of pride with what he has created. They do it all. They do private detective work. They do armed security. They do courier work. In fact, I believe that all of their security people are armed. And here's the difference. This company provides incredible training to their security officers. And they are security officers in every sense of the word. Their training is rivals most police training in the United States today, including firearms training, handcuffing, legal issues. It's really impressive, and this company is really impressive. So if you are looking for security for anything from a jewelry store to an apartment complex or any other of your security needs, I would really urge you to contact
JSD Protective Services. Their phone number is 1-844-663-3611. And their website is jsdprotectiveservices.com. Check them out. You won't be sorry. Each week we try to bring you some interesting, newsworthy comments and stories about things that are important to law enforcement and to the supporters of law enforcement. Make sure that you check us out at BlueLivesMatter.blue. And also check us out at my Facebook page, which is Randy Sutton Public Figure. I communicate with many people there through private messaging, and also you can see all of my posts and the Facebook posting of Blue Lives Matter as well. Once again, thank you. Be safe. See you next week.